Yasyopadesha Didhitya. Yasyopadesha Didhitya. Chiratmana Prakashate. Chiratmana Prakashate. Namasad Gurave Tasmai.
Namasad Gurave Tasmai.
Swavidyadhwanta Bhanave.
Swavidyadhwanta Bhanave.
Yasya Upadesha Didhitya Chiratma Naha Prakashate. Namaha Sadgurave Tasmai. Swa Avidya Dwanta Bhanave. So compound Swa Avidya Dwanta Bhanave. So here in this let's look at it this way. In the first verse, the nature of the Atma as Brahman, your being as Brahman, as limitless Brahman, was praised. Salutations to that Atma. In the second, the Lord was praised also, Purushottama, but in terms of the jnanam, the knowledge itself, is praised. And then in this third verse, the Guru is praised. Okay. So you have the object of knowledge, yourself as Brahman, then the knowledge itself of that Atma, which is limitless, and then the Guru, the teacher of that knowledge. Is all three are praised. So the object of knowledge, the knowledge, and the means of knowledge. So it's complete. So second line, Namaha Sadgurave Tasmai. Salutations, my salutations to the Sadguru, my teacher, to my guru, Tasmai, to that teacher, to him, to my teacher. Swa Avidya Dwanta Bhanave, who is like the sun to the darkness of my ignorance. Swa Avidya means, Avidya is ignorance, self-ignorance. Swa avidya means my ignorance, or the ignorance of my own self. Right? So Bhanu is the sun, Dwanta is darkness. So salutations to my teacher who is like the sun to the darkness of my ignorance, ignorance of myself. Swa avidya dwanta bhanave. It's a beautiful compound, it's just one word. In Sanskrit you can make words out of many words. You put them together and they become one word grammatically. So this is one grammatical word, which is called a bahuvri. It's a name for my teacher. My teacher is the one who, like the sun, removes the darkness of my ignorance, my self-ignorance. It's very beautiful. So then he says, salutations to my teacher. And he says, by the yesya, means whose, upadesha diditya, by the light, diditya means light, didi. Didityā, by the light of whose upadesha, of whose teaching, the upadesha, the chidātmā, the self, the ātmā means self, the chidātmā, the self which is consciousness, my being which is consciousness, the chidātmā, prakāśate, is revealed, is shown, shines, it shines, my own nature shines for us, for all of his students or her students. So, we're talking now about the whole teaching methodology and the whole guru-sisha relationship, where this teaching is transmitted as what we call a pramana, as a means of knowledge. So in India, the teacher is, like in the Guru Stotra, many of you know probably, the teacher is, the guru is always revered as being more dear to me than my own eyes. Because my eyes, my own sense organs, can give me knowledge of the world. All of the world within Maya, right within the creation. My sense organs, backed by my mind, can become a means of knowledge for knowing, for gaining knowledge of the world. But my own sense organs cannot turn around and look at me, the one who's using the sense organs. So there are the sense organs are a means of knowledge for everything except myself. But then say, I need to know myself. What is going to be the means of knowledge? This is such an important issue because there is a big looming difference between having the experience of something and having knowledge of something. You can experience something, but you don't have knowledge of what it is exactly you're experiencing. And that's the problem that we find ourselves in. We certainly have our own self-experience. That self-experience is not some zero that doesn't exist. You're aware of your being. You're aware that you're a conscious, existent being. You know, that your own presence, your own me-ness, your own I-ness is something that is self-evident to you. It's so self-evident you completely take it for granted. But yes, I'm here. Of course I'm here. Of course I exist. Of course I'm a conscious being. We don't second-guess that. It's just simply using language. You're not going to say, am I conscious or am I not conscious? You know, do I exist or don't I exist? No, you take it absolutely for granted. You do exist, but just using the simple meaning of the word, and you do enjoy consciousness until you're dead, you know. So you are. And then when you're after you're dead, then you have some religious beliefs that maybe I go on after death. We don't know. I hope so. And maybe there's some heaven or hell, but maybe I reincarnate. But I hope that my being continues on after death. Those are all beliefs and hopes and wishes. But I have those wishes that the same conscious being that I am might continue after death in some form. The point here is that yourself as a conscious being is known to you. And I'm a conscious being, and I'm also the one for whom all of these experiences are. If I'm seeing something, I am there. I am the one who's receiving that information. If I'm hearing something, I'm receiving that information. If I'm having an emotion, it belongs to me. So this me-ness, the selfhood, you know, the conscious being of who you are, is something absolutely taken for granted. That self-experience is there, not as an object. You can't look at yourself like I can look at the chair, or I can look at the iPad or whatever. I can't look at conscious being. I can't look at the me that illumines everything else. But I am that. I am that conscious being, and that conscious being that I am is self-evident. It's self-shining. It's like the sun doesn't need to bring in some other luminary to light it up. It is its own luminosity. And as a conscious being, the one who is present to all of my experience, I'm my own luminosity. I don't have to bring in some other consciousness to illumine me. But the problem, so that's not the problem. I am self-evident to myself at all times as being present to all, I'm present to all experience that I have. But I don't know who I am. I can say I'm a conscious being, but I don't know if that conscious being is some epiphenomena like a byproduct of my physical body and will die when the body dies. I don't know if it really knows. I mean, I can pray and hope that it transmigrates or that it goes to heaven and not hell. You know, I can hope for that. I don't know what this conscious being is doing here. You know, what is my purpose? I don't know what my consciousness is in relationship to your consciousness. I don't know what this conscious being is in relationship to God. Is God just a concept that I hope that there is some God there, or is it something kind of like a fantasy? Or does God really exist? And if God really does exist, then what relationship does God have to me, and what is that God like? All of these things I really don't know. So in terms of taking for granted my being and the self-experience, yes. But knowing who I am, what the self-experience is contextually, do I survive death or not, etc. What am I in relationship to you? What am I in relationship to the creation? What am I in relationship to God? Why am I here? Then, you know, I don't know. I just simply don't know. I can have some beliefs But even those beliefs will be filled with doubt. You know, belief and doubt go together. And so that is a very disconcerting situation to be in once we recognize that we're in it. Also, Bhagawan, I can use the word of God, Bhagawan, has created, the creation is made in such a way that you don't really have to confront that question, the who am I question. You don't have to, because you're so busy in the world being something situationally. Like I'm the teacher, you're the student, I'm the teacher. So now I'm taken care of, I'm the teacher. If I'm with my parents, I'm their child. Immediately, I don't have to think about it. If I'm working, then I'm the teacher at school, or I'm the therapist, or I'm the friend to my friend, or I'm the partner to my partner. Whatever it is, immediately I have some label to hold this I. And I don't have to ever. I could be the mother to my children, or the caretaker, the handler to my animals. It's endless. I'm continually situationally taking care of. I have words for myself in all of these relative situations. Even gender-wise, you know, or height-wise. Like I'm a woman, you're a man. Okay. Or I'm 5'8". I'm happy or I'm sad. You know, I'm thin or I'm fat. Whatever. I always have words to kind of handle me, to define me in all of these relative ways. But what happens when somebody presses you a little bit about who you are? Like, well, you're a teacher to your students, but you're not a teacher to your parents. You're a child. You're a daughter to your parents, right? And you're not a daughter to your friends. You're a friend to your friends. So all of these labels that you take on are just situational, right? It's like taking on different dresses. They're situational. They really don't say anything about you. They say something about your relationships in the world. They don't say anything about who you actually are. Even your emotions, where sometimes you're happy, but other times you're sad. So the same one that was happy is now the one who's sad. So you can't be both. These emotions negate each other. See what I mean? And so who then are you, the one who is playing all of these roles, or the one who is present to all these situations which actually negate each other, or we could say replace each other? They don't replace you, they replace each other. And so then the question comes in, well, who am I? And honestly, this question, just think about this. You have had infinite, according to the whole Hindu cosmology, the way we look at your life, you have had infinite, beginningless births until this time. And most likely until this time, this birth, this particular question did not arise. That is astounding. It just shows you kind of how thick the Maya is, how well taken care of we are within this duality in terms of keeping the ignorance going. We don't necessarily need to question the situation at all until we do. And there are a lot of different reasons, I suppose, that would bring a person to questioning life, or what you're doing here, why are you here, to really seriously question it, you know. But again, it need not necessarily arise. I've told the story many times about my mom after I came back from India. I'd been gone several years. And she wanted to know a little bit about what I'd been doing. And I made the mistake of, not a mistake exactly, I just started telling her about Vedanta and what I'd been studying. And she goes, "Oh, honey, I don't have those kind of problems." She didn't mean anything bad by it, but she kind of didn't want it here anymore. Not meaningful to her, you know? Mm-hmm. That's how it is. You need not be questioning your life. You just even in terms of the sukha dukkha, the happiness and sorrow that we experience, so much sorrow actually, because every time a happy experience goes away, there's a sorrow because you've lost it, you know. And so there's a lot of suffering. There's a lot of suffering in life. But what we tend to do is just try to abate, get rid of that suffering and do something else, you know, create another situation, do something to make myself feel better, and then to try something else that might make me happy. We go on and on and on. This is what we do. But it never works. It never works. If you say it works, then we have to qualify what we mean by working. It works for a short period of time. We have to keep working. We have to keep maintaining working, trying to create a situation where now I feel like this is it, and I feel whole, and now I feel complete. But these are experiences that pass. Who has ever reached an experience, had an experience there? You say, okay, now I have done. It's called kritya krityaha. Now I've become a kritya krityaha. What is to be done, what is to be accomplished, I have done. It is done. I'm a kritya krityaha. Everything is fine now. No, it just doesn't happen. We do and we do and we do. We perfect, we perfect, we perfect. Trying to make a beautiful life for ourselves. And you know what? Sometimes we actually have a very beautiful life. And you'll say, this is the worst. You say, my life is so beautiful, it's so perfect, and I'm not happy. I couldn't ask for anything better. I couldn't ask for a more beautiful place. I couldn't ask for a more beautiful partner. I couldn't ask for more beautiful children. I'm secure. I have money. I have everything that I need. I have friends. He's in samsara. These are all the things we need. You know, we need security, and we need a good home, and we need people who love us. We need a secure family structure, I can say, and we need to have all of our friends, you know, and animals. Yeah. So now I have all of these things. But why am I not whole? Why am I not whole? You know? And then as I start to question, that's when I become a mumukshu. And that's when I'll throw my hands up to God and say, if you're there, if you actually exist, if you're there, please save me. And these are the questions that the sisha, the student, approaches the guru in these Upanishads and asks this question. Please tell me who I am. Is there anything here that survives death? Is there any way I can be free of dharma and adharma? Can I be free of sukha and dukkha? Is there anything that about me that is free? Please teach me. Please teach me that. All of the Upanishads have this dialogue where in one form or another the student approaches the teacher and ask for this knowledge. Who am I? What am I doing here? I bet many of you remember when you were a teenager. Remember? Do you remember asking yourself? Especially for me, I remember, especially when I was a teenager, asking God and kind of praying and asking Him to come down and tell me, why am I here? What am I doing? What am I doing here? What is this whole thing all about? There's a death, there's a wanting to know. And when that question becomes primary for you, where it's not a question that you can dismiss, it's a real, real question. Otherwise, it's just a passing thought that goes through, it doesn't really matter. No. When it becomes a real question, at that time, according to the tradition of the Upanishadic tradition, the Vedic tradition, at that time, your teacher will come to you. In this creation, wherever the proper teacher for you is, that you will be united with that teacher. That is the promise of the Vedas. But your question has to be real. Your The question has to be right. What if you really want liberation? Let me astral travel, you know? Mm-hmm. Let me be able to read minds. Let me have samadhi experiences. That means that the problem really hasn't been discerned very clearly yet. The question isn't the problem. The question isn't right. What you need, you know, can be met by somebody who can teach astral traveling, you know? So you'll evoke that because the question, that's what you want. So what your definition of moksha, of liberation, is astral traveling. Or your definition of moksha, of liberation, is samadhi experiences. That's what you think it is. That's what you want. And so that's what your intention is. But what about when your intention is truly, I want to know. I want to know myself. I want to know what's going on. I want to know the truth of this whole thing. Yeah. I want to know the truth. I want to know who I am, why I'm here. I want to know God, if there is a God. Then that's my intention. And that intention evokes or invokes a teacher, your guru. And so when the person's intention is there and it's real, then the universe provides that teacher. And so that's when this guru-sisha relationship comes into being for you. And this Upanishad, the teaching in the form that we call it Upanishad, the Upanishads really contain this teaching tradition, which is called a pramana. The Upanishads are called a pramana, where the teacher, it's called a sampradaya of teaching methodology, the teacher then can step by step point out to you who you are. Step by step by step. What's so incredible, the thing to understand, that the incredible simplicity of the whole thing, because in fact who you are, the person that you are, is right here, because it's you. It's not about having a samadhi experience of something unknown. Like, let's have a samadhi experience of that self to be recognized, as though there's some self somewhere that you don't know. It's not that at all. It's that the self that you are is the self that is present right now, but it's not known, not recognized by your mind, not because you're not there, but because your mind doesn't have self-knowledge and so takes the self, the me, to be one with itself, and then it takes itself to be this physical body, and then you've become, from the standpoint of the mind, just this entity subject to birth and death and pleasure and pain. Whatever the mind is experiencing, that's who you are. Whatever the body is experiencing, it's birth and death, that's who you are. Whatever your environment is, that's your karma, you know. So you just become, for all practical purpose, you are this, who is just an object in the world, basically, to be born and to die. That's it. And anything else you don't really know. You don't really know if this body is, you know, this body, well, you do know that this body dies. You don't know what happens to you when this body dies. You don't know what your relationship is with God. You don't even know if there is a God. And so all of these questions, once those questions become paramount to you, then this guru-sisha relationship comes into being, as the tradition holds, you know. And then most people, most of us, many of us, we all have our own stories to tell. Like, when exactly did you meet your teacher? Did you come into contact with this knowledge in some form or another? It's always important. It's an important time. And you look at exactly who you were at that time and what questions brought you to your teacher, you know, and how usually the meeting of your teacher is always at the perfect time. It couldn't have gone, be pushed any later, or you would have been dead. I like that. Because it was so important. I like that. So we all have our own stories. So here, this is a praise of the teacher who is like the sun to the ignorance of my, the sun to the darkness of my self-ignorance. you know, who their language is really beautiful here, through the light of whose teaching myself, you know, shines. The self that I am shines, because the ajnanam, the ignorance that had been as though covering my own nature, is removed. So it's not like the guru gives you the experience of a self. You know, like in duality, when you're gaining, let me explain this for a minute. In duality in this world, when a teacher comes to give you knowledge of a subject matter, so you're studying any subject matter, whether it's be math or history, it doesn't matter what it is. They are giving you knowledge of something that is away from you. It's not something that you are, it's something that's away from you. And when that's the case, the teacher has to first kind of give you the experience of whatever it is they're presenting. They give you the experience of that, which is not there until they give it to you in some form or another. And then they give you knowledge of that experience. Do you see what I mean? Like say it comes to mind, it's like if you've ever studied chemistry, do you remember going in, when you were in high school, going into the chemistry lab or in college? You know, and you're doing an experiment, you're putting all of these things together, and now you're experiencing something you've never experienced before. And now you have to gain knowledge of this experience and how this experience works so that you really understand it, right? But you didn't have that experience. If you had to be given the experience, and then you learn about that experience. That's how knowledge takes place in the world. But here the experience is already here. The experience of yourself, your self-experience is already here. The experience of your mind is already here. Experience of your body is here. Experience of your sense organs is here. Experience of this world is here. The experience you have at any given moment through your sense organs is already here. So now the teacher now, in terms of self-knowledge or the knowledge of reality, what is actually here, that knowledge is going to be something that is focused on an already existent experience, which is interesting, because this already existent experience of my being and of this world, you know, even though it's here, there's no way for me to know what this experience actually is. I'm having the experience without any means of knowledge for what this experience is. One way I think is nice to explain it, we talked a little bit about it yesterday, is if you think, say you're having a dream. You're having a dream, and in this dream there are many characters. Maybe it's a beautiful, you know, grassy park, or, you know, whatever scenes, some beautiful scene going on in your dream. And in the dream, there's animals and birds, and it's a nice day. And there's also you are there with all of your friends. So that's the dream. The dream's carrying on, very beautiful dream. Could be a nightmare also, but we're having a nice dream. This nice dream is taking place. Now, say you're in the dream, your dream character in the dream, and you would like to know what the truth of the whole thing is. Yeah. Now, you as the dream character, looking at the dream from the inside, you are experiencing the dream from the inside, right? You're in the dream, you're experiencing it through your sense organs. You're experiencing your mind and whatever you're thinking, you're experiencing your friends, you're experiencing your relationships, and you're experiencing yourself as a conscious being. All of it is there, right? But because of the limitations of you as the dream character with your limited body, your one body among many bodies, and what could just kind of a small little dot on the map of the whole dream, okay? You're just this one little dot on the map, you know, with your sense organs experiencing the dream and your own being, and you ask the who am I question, you know? So, who am I? Who am I? The conscious being that I am? Is this conscious being that I am going to die when this dream body dies? You know? what is the relationship of me, this conscious being, with all of these other dream characters that you're not calling dream characters, right? They're just calling all of these other people. What is the relationship? What is the relationship of my conscious being to me, to the whole dream? This dream character wants to know. Now, when the alarm goes off and you wake up from the dream as the waker, you can answer all those questions. You can say, oh, the whole dream comes from me, is sustained by me, resolves into me. All of them are, all of the dream characters are just part of me as kind of the Ishwara, the Lord of the dream. They all belong, the whole scenario of the dream belongs to the dream. All of the characters in the dream, in a sense, are just playing a role that belongs to the whole, that's part and parcel of the whole story. And it's my dream, and that dream comes from myself. All of you dream characters, you just enjoy my being. My being that is the very being of the whole dream. So that's the waker. I can easily talk about it and talk about the wonder of having a dream and all of these things, you know. And other people that are awake can also be going, yeah, I have those dreams also. You know, yes, that's how it is. All of the awake people are nodding their heads. But go back into the dream. How is this dream character going to realize that the very self of the dream character, the very self of me, the little dream person in the dream, is the self of the whole dream? And the whole dream actually comes into manifestation and goes out of manifestation without harming me in any way. And the whole dream actually has only my being for its truth. Just to give you an example of your experience of that in reference to the dream, when you wake up from a dream, you know, the alarm goes off or it's time to wake up, and the dream is then just immediately vanishes. When you wake up from the dream like that, nothing has happened. Do you ever have this weirdest experience, though? Whole dream vanishes. It's gone. All of the dream characters are gone. The dream person that you were identified with, totally gone. You know, whatever important things were happening in the dream, gone. The dream world's to smithereens, gone. Whole thing. And yet, nothing happens. Because nothing happens to your being. Nothing happens to the being, which was the truth of the dream. So there's not any experience of loss, even though you might say, I woke up from that dream, I wish it wasn't finished. You know, you might say something like that. But you're not going to say, I just destroyed hundreds of millions of people. I've just destroyed the dream earth. By waking up, I destroyed the dream. You know? Probably you don't feel that way. Because the dream had no real substance. It was mitya. You don't say the word mitya, but that's what it was. So it was mitya. It had no independent being at all. But while it was there, it was so real. As long as you were in it, it was so real. But when you wake up from it, nothing happens. Nothing happens to what was actually there, which was your own being. When you wake up, you know that, and you're enlightened. But how to get this dream character to wake up? The dream character needs a dream guru. But how would that dream guru know to be able to teach the dream character? How would that guru, because still being in the dream, how would they know? Well, that dream guru needs a guru. Okay, but this goes on to an infinite regress. Right? Because why I say that, this guru needs a guru, needs a guru, needs a guru, needs a guru, to an infinite regress. Why would that be? Because for you, with the means of knowledge you have available, which is really all of the means of knowledge that you have to know what you know, all of it is in the end based upon sense data. Sense perception, whether it's inference or presumption or knowing that there's not an elephant in the room, all of the means of knowledge that we have available are based are only good, are based on sense data, and sensory perceptions can only give me knowledge of what exists within duality. And so I am capable of learning, exploring within duality, within the world, in order to learn and to understand what's going on here. But what means of knowledge do I have to know that this whole universe really has a reality similar to the dream? How would I know that? By what means of knowledge? You know? And so this, that's why this teaching tradition is within the Vedic, within the Vedic teachings of India. This teaching tradition of the Upanishads is actually viewed as beginningless, as something which is beginningless, as something that actually comes as part of the creation, because this creation, this whole creation, everything that exists, is what we call Ishvara. We look at it as this is a the creation itself is a conscious being. So we say Purushottama. Purusha means person. Utta means that supreme, ultimate person is actually the whole infinite creation, which is nothing but conscious being. And so if we start to, as we unfold this, and it's kind of painting a big broad picture for you right now in terms of gaining knowledge, but if we look at it in that way, then this whole infinite universe is viewed more as a manifestation of infinite knowledge rather than just Mother Nature. And Mother Nature is beautiful, but Mother Nature is part of the manifestation of infinite knowledge. So let me give you a little example. See, if they look at the creation, in the Vedas, they look at the creation as something that comes into manifestation and goes out of manifestation continually from beginningless time. And so this whole infinite creation, if you look at it as infinite knowledge, can be similar to your own experience of the limited knowledge that you have abiding there in your psyche. Like, what if I ask you right now to think of a beautiful mountain scene? Immediately, your mind will bring up some form of a mountain that is beautiful to you. Just like that. That's what we call manifest knowledge. That knowledge was residing there in unmanifest condition, because you can't walk around thinking of a beautiful mountain all the time, right? But you can think of it. That means it's there in unmanifest condition. Or what if I ask you to think of think of the house in which you were born, you know, if you can remember it. Think of the last house that, when you were young, think of the home that you lived in. You know, you have to go back into your memory banks and bring that forward. But that knowledge, when the knowledge becomes manifest, then that knowledge is something known to you. Otherwise, it's just not that it's unknown, but it's abiding in unmanifest condition. This whole infinite creation is looked at like that, except in terms of infinite knowledge, not limited knowledge. So when you have a daydream, or you have an imagination, that is manifest knowledge, because you're pulling from an unmanifest condition, bringing it into manifestation. In the Upanishads, we look at the whole creation. When we talk about Ishvara or God, look at the conscious being, like the conscious being of the dreamer is a good example, from which infinite manifest knowledge comes into being. And included, and is sustained and then resolved from beginningless time. But included in that infinite knowledge is the knowledge of what is, right? Because it's infinite knowledge. That includes the knowledge of what is. So the knowledge of what is available as what is. Because this creation is viewed as a manifestation of infinite knowledge, not inert matter. You know? And so knowledge of what is knowledge is available, just like for you, in your unconscious or in your psyche, all of the unmanifest knowledge, which is knowledge, is your knowledge, is available for you. But you have to bring it forward. You have to, in order for it to be manifest. So what about if you look somewhat like that in terms of this creation, don't look at it as just an inert blob, but look at it as a manifestation of infinite intelligence or a manifestation of infinite knowledge. That's why we're so interconnected with it. That's why your intentions matter. You know, that's why you have so many experiences, just as any human being. You have so many different experiences of interconnectedness, which show you like beacon lights, you know, that there is an interconnected whole here. Just like everybody's had their little variety of synchronicities and psychic experiences and, you know, sensing something and all of these type of things that tell us inside without real clarity, but show us inside that there's an interconnectedness between all of us on more than just this physical level, on a psychic level also. So in so many ways we experience that, even though we don't know that much about it, right? But we experience it so that we know that it's there. But when you start thinking about it, what all of these experiences, synchronistic experiences, show us is that the universe is not just a physical like clock ticking away, but it's actually enjoys consciousness. That they're all of our minds enjoying consciousness, but our minds, we find, are interconnected with each other. That means there's an interconnected network, right, that holds all of us together, which is exactly what the Upanishads are talking about. They call it Hiranyagarbha. This physical aspect of the world they call as Virat, you know. But the subtle mind of the world they call as Hiranyagarbha. They make this distinction between subtle and physical, which is in a way kind of a false distinction, because even when you have a dream, manifest is the subtle aspect and the physical aspect, which the physical aspect all is subtle also. It's not like when you have a dream, there's a physical world that of matter that comes into being, and a subtle world that pervades it. The whole thing is subtle. The whole thing is only knowledge. But knowledge itself will have these two different types of aspects. Okay. So, when we think more in terms of this world as a manifestation of infinite knowledge, then I, this body, mind, sense organs, are part and parcel of that whole being, right? Who I am, this body, mind, sense organs, being part of the whole, is not just part of an inert whole, it's part of infinite knowledge, manifest knowledge, it's part of consciousness. Kind of like in the dream. So the consciousness, this body belongs to the conscious whole, and the consciousness which the conscious whole enjoys is the conscious being that every part of it enjoys. So this is, the whole universe is kind of like a lucid dream, but not a lucid dream of a person, a lucid dream of consciousness itself. Right? So that being said, now I want to gain self-knowledge. Part of this lucid dream wants to gain self-knowledge. And so is that self-knowledge available? Right? And so part and parcel of this creation contains this teaching in one form or another for those who seek it out. So in the Hindu cosmology, they look at this whole guru-sisha relationship in terms of the rishis, the rishis, the first teachers, Dakshinamurti, the first teacher, as being integral to the universe itself, to the manifestation of the universe, as are all human beings and animals and suns and stars and all of this type of thing. This knowledge itself is integral to the universe. And so when you're ready for it, you evoke it and you get it. That's what it is. We're not used to thinking like this. But once you start breaking through a very kind of materialistic view of the world, it becomes quite exciting, you know. And you can also understand why what you think, what you desire, what you need matters. Yeah. It's not just this physical, you're not just this physical product. You know, there's a subtle part of you also. And the things that you desire, the things that you want, the things that you do, they affect the universe also. And they attract to you many things from the universe. And so it's the same in terms of knowledge. When I really need that, when I want it, when that's my intention. You can't fake an intention. Let me have this intention. No. It's not like that. It isn't like that. Your intention has to be real. It's accompanied by emotion. It's by passion. It's something that you actually want, that you actually need. And that intention gets put up to the universe, and then that you get your answer. You get what you need. That's kind of how it works. And the same is this guru-sisha relationship. When you need it, then you get it. Yeah. And when you get your teacher, we look at that tradition of teaching as something beginningless. That teacher, what's coming through that teacher is a tradition that's gone on from beginningless time that holds up a mirror to your being. That's what an Upanishad is. It's a means of knowledge that actually holds up a mirror to your being so that you can recognize yourself free of all of the ajnanam and all of the dresses that you had been wearing. And so once, when this teacher comes and holds up that mirror and you recognize yourself and that ajnanam, that ignorance goes away, then you feel, I would say it's like an infinite gratitude. I remember feeling this. It's an infinite gratitude that, oh my God, there is such a thing as Ishwara. There is such a thing as a guru. It's something true. It's not just some fantasy made up. It actually exists. This knowledge actually exists. I can actually, as I recognize myself, I'm actually, in fact, whole and complete and everything that I would ever want to be. It's not something that can be improved. And so when you recognize this, then that Guru Stotram comes where, you know, there's nothing more dear to me than my guru who held up this light of knowledge to reveal my own nature. And so always in these texts that we learn, there's always this prayer that will be, it'll be a prayer to Bhagavan, because recognizing there's such a thing as Ishwara, it'll be a prayer to the nature of yourself, prayer to the knowledge, and a prayer to the guru, which is also Ishwara. That's Ishwara coming through that teacher-student relationship, you know, to reveal this knowledge. And so in three verses, these are introductory prayer verses by Shankara, who's writing a commentary on what Hastamalika had to say. And so he ends it with this beautiful quote saying, salutations to my teacher who is like the sun to the darkness of my ignorance, who has made myself come forward, who's reveal itself through the light of the Upadesha. The Upadesha, we call it Upadesha, is the actual teaching of the Upanishads. It means literally teaching, but when we use it, it's the teaching of these Upanishads, or the teaching of this tradition. So, that's it.
Shate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shanti